So we are at the beginning of part three of Tefillat Nishmat Kol Chai, which begins with the words Mi Mitzrayim Ga'altanu Hashem Elokeinu Mi Beit Avadim Petitanu. Okay, so for those of you who have the same edition I do, it looks like this. Okay, so we noted at the end of last week's shiur that we have two different kinds of ideas that are found in this one phrase. One is that Mi Mitzrayim Ga'altanu, that from Mitzrayim you have redeemed us, and the other is Mi Beit Avadim Petitanu, and from a house of slavery, okay, you have rescued us, if you will. So I asked the question at the end of the shiur last week, what is the difference? Because obviously, if we're going to be nigal, we're going to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, and we're going to be nifdeh mi beit avadim, they have to mean definitionally two different things. Do you remember that? And I asked you to sort of think about it. I gave you a hint, and I said the first idea of redemption is gufani. It's physical. And the second is ruchani, which is spiritual. And this is, by the way, very good Pesach Torah, for obvious reasons. Okay. Now, what I'm about to share with you comes from Rav Soloveitchik. And I think it was a 1977 shiur, and it was the very, very first time I'd ever heard Rav Soloveitchik, who subsequently and forevermore became my Rebbe. Whether or not I was in the shiur yet is immaterial. At that point, for me, it was a total transformation. I had heard the closest thing in my life to Torah Mesinai when I heard the Rav on that evening. And I want to share with you something that he said that night about these two ideas. In order to understand the two ideas, let me give you a little bit of background. Before the Rav went to the University of Berlin, which a lot of people know, and got his PhD, he went to the University of Warsaw in Poland for a year. At that time, he studied what was then called political science, what you and I today would call political theory. Okay? Not just because of that political science today is very, very empirical and data-driven, but more than that, when the Rav did political science, it was political theory, it was about ideas. It was political ideas, political theory, theoretical notions of things like what's justice, what's freedom, and so forth. So with that in mind, let me explain to you two ideas. Within political theory overall, there is the idea of freedom from and freedom to. Okay? Freedom from means to be free from a certain kind of external pressure, external hegemony. That's really freedom from. And then there's freedom to, which is secondary and subsequent to freedom from. And that is the way we would describe it in modern terminology. That's the ability, the freedom to self-actualize. Okay? Applying that idea, that classic political idea, the Rav said this. He said that when we talk about being nigal, being redeemed from Mitzrayim, that was only the first step. That was freedom from. So at that point, we were no longer under the direct hegemony of the Egyptians. And all the Midrashim and all the Torah that you know about what it was like during those 210 years that we were in Egypt, in particular, subsequent to the death of Yosef. Okay? It was terrible. It was, you know, in some ways beyond description. In some ways it was similar to the stories that, and that are not just stories, but the accounts that you and I know of the Shoah. Things were very, very bad. Okay? And we were free of that. But yet, we were not yet free to live lives as Jews. When did we accomplish that goal? Only when we had witnessed and been involved directly in the revelation at Har Sinai. That's the second idea. We went Mibet Avadim, which the Rav talks about extensively as really being a slave mentality, to being B'nai Chorin, free men and women. Okay, it's very, very interesting, by the way. It's B'nai Chorin, which is the feminine form of being free, because it ends in a nun. It's not even B'nai Chorim. So really, it's very inclusive of men and women. So we went from freedom from to freedom to. We went from physical freedom to spiritual freedom. All right, we went from being slaves to Paro, Avadim Ayinu LeParo B'Mitzrayim, right? We went from that, said Rav Soloveitchik, to being Ovdei Hashem, the servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the reception of the Torah. That is how the Rav explains these kinds of phrases. Okay, I think it's a very positive and very really an inspiring and powerful way of understanding what these terms mean. Are they clear, or is everyone good about that, or any questions on that?
I'm sorry, just
go ahead.
I may go back for just a minute.
Sure.
You said freedom too, the ability to self-actualize.
Yes.
Freedom from?
Freedom from was to leave the hegemony of external control, okay?
Okay.
Such as slavery. And when we enter Mibet Avadim, when we're taking out of a house of slavery, it's leaving the slave mentality to be free spiritually. Okay. But of course, we should talk a moment about what that really means. So in the modern world, freedom means, you know, basically to do anything and everything that you want. We're all familiar with, for example, the culture of the West. So that's not freedom within a Torah perspective, okay? But rather, the true freedom, at least from the Torah perspective, is a, as we say in Pirkei Avot, is that Ein Ben Charim Elish Mish Oseik B'Torah. There's no such thing as freedom, because freedom is not lack of obligation and responsibility, but freedom is living your life in a responsible way. As Jews, our responsibility comes from fulfilling the Torah. That's how we live in a practical way, okay, and we experience freedom within that context. But if you ever wonder if freedom is quote-unquote doing what you want, watch a class of children that has a poor teacher who cannot do classroom management. If there can't be classroom management, absolutely no learning takes place. And actually, the kids are nervous, upset. While they think they're having a blast destroying that poor substitute, okay, what's really happening is that they're afraid, because there are no rules, there are no regulations, there are no boundaries. That's not freedom. I'm sorry?
Lord of the Flies.
Yes, indeed. Lord of the Flies would be a good example of that sort of thing. Okay, so that's freedom from, freedom to, applied in a Jewish context to the Geula from Mitzrayim and the Pedia from the slave mentality. Okay, next. Bera'av zantanu. The you nourished us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, throughout Jewish history, really, when there have been periods of famine, right? Not only that, ubasava, okay, kilkaltanu. And when we've been satisfied, you've helped sustain that, okay, which is very similar. Remember I said last week, this is really an on-ramp to the Shemoneh Esrei? You're going to see that as we go through over and over again, similarities to the Shemoneh Esrei. So, in other words, when we were satisfied, you sustained us, you supported us, you enabled that period of sova, of satisfaction, or sevilla, right, to continue. Okay. Mecherev hitzaltanu. You've saved us over and over again from the sword, from war. We have, as you all know, violated, quote-unquote, every law of history. The very fact that we're here tonight is a celebration of that, that we are not tachat mazal, we're not under mazal, in the sense of the famous Talmudic statement of, that I've shared with you before, ein mazal l'Yisrael, that we don't depend on the stars. We're not under the astronomical signs, but instead, we're directly tachat kanfei Hashchina. Okay? Umidever milatanu. And from the plagues that have wrecked vengeance in the world, most of the time, more often than not, you have saved us. So, for example, just historically, per capita, there were a fewer number of Jews who died during the Black Plague than there were Christians per capita. In other words, obviously there were far more Christians than there were Jews, but what happened statistically is that in terms of percentiles, okay, there were more Christians on a percentile basis than Jews who died during the Black Plague. Why? We don't necessarily know per se. It may well have something to do with Netilat Yadayim, Mikveh, and so on and so forth. And just a sense of, I think a sense of what is mi'us, right? And what is not mi'us. I mean, after all, think about it from the point of view of an egg, right? So everybody in this room knows that eggs today are not fertilized. You know that. Yet, what do all of us do?
Check the blood spot.
We look for a blood spot. So why do we look for a blood spot? Is it a blood spot? Is it going to make it not kasher? No, because it's not fertilized. So only blood through fertilization and an egg would be forbidden. Yet, when we look at it, what do? We sit there and we go,
ooh.
Okay, so maybe an advanced sense of that and a greater emphasis on some kinds of hygiene. Whatever the reason was, whatever the bracha was, many, many times. Yes.
Because we knew Hashem is in charge of our immune, that also helped.
You're right. 100% correct. Okay, let's continue. Mechalim, okay, mechalim, ra'im, v'ne'emanim. Interesting way to use the word ne'eman. Delitanu, and from evil diseases and evil severe diseases, you have spared us. So here's a very interesting word. Again, we've had this over and over again as we've looked at Hebrew as it appears in the Tefillah. Ne'amanim would mean believed, right? But right, that's what you would say. V'ne'amanata achayot metim. But in this context, it means severe. Just like Kuf Dalet Shin can be Kodesh or and be holy, or it can refer to, for example, a Kadesh, a male purveyor of services of the evening, okay, to be very polite, okay, and in our crowd, okay? Same word, Kuf Dalet Shin. Okay, so same thing here. We're calling this really, you've saved us from these terrible, terrible diseases. Okay, so, and now in overall recognition, Adhena Azarunu Rachamecha, until this point, you have saved us with your mercy. Okay, and we've discussed mercy Many, many, many times. V'lo azavunu chasadecha. Okay? You have never reject. Your kindness has never abandoned us. Okay? So, what are we talking about? What is chesed? So we've spoken about this before, but not as often as rachamim. Chesed, remember, is the overflow of kindness. So, for example, what's real gemilu chasadim? Real gemilu chasadim is doing more than that was asked of you to do. So, what's a great example of real gemilu chasadim? Rivka. Right? So Eliezer, although his name is never ever found, even once in the Chumash, but we identify him as Eliezer. So Eliezer basically says, excuse me, may I have a drink? And what does Rivka do? We all know the story. Right? And you could sing every manner and variety of songs about it, but what did she do? She did more than she was asked. Okay? Lifnim Mishurat Adin. She went overboard. Chesed, says the Rambam, is the overflowing of kindness and care and concern. So your Chesed Hashem, right? V'lo azavunu chasdecha, and your kindness has never abandoned us. Va'al titshenu Hashem. Don't ever reject us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Hashem Elokeinu. Right? When? Today, tomorrow, and forever. Lenetzach. Forever. Okay? So again, Netzach is another one of those words. Right? Sometimes it's Lenetzach Netzachim, which means forever. Sometimes it means success. Okay? A Netzachon. Right? We were successful in a war. But here it means forever. Okay. Now, we really get into some fascinating things here. We're now going to talk about organs. We're going to talk about ruach. We're going to talk about neshama. We're going to talk about the lashon, our tongue, and so on and so forth. So, and all of this, okay, and obviously a human being is far greater than the sum of his or her parts, right?
Did we just speak about that in paragraph before?
Not a long time ago. But now we're throwing into the mix not only just the purely physical, we're putting in the spiritual. Okay, I'm very glad that you brought that up, because if you hadn't, I would have. And, you know, it's wonderful. Thank you. Yes, this is similar in kind, but it goes the extra mile by talking about ruach and neshama. So let's take a look and see what that is. So given all of this, all the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us, ceaselessly, right? Every moment of the day and in the past. So al kein, therefore, evarim shepilagta banu, the organs that you have placed within us, okay? And especially in the ancient world, okay, there was a sense that each of the organs had some sort of emotional connection. Okay, goes back to Aristotle. Okay, that the liver did this and the gallbladder did that, and you'll even read, I think even in Shakespeare sometimes you'll see, you know, my bile is rising or something along those lines. Okay, so we're playing on that idea here. So al kein evarim shebilagdu banu, therefore the organs that you've placed within us, v'ruach u'neshama. So ruach is literally spirit, neshama is soul. And we've also discussed what ruach was before. There's a good French term, it's called elan vital. It's the spirit that you see when a human being or anything is alive. So for example, I don't know how many of you unfortunately have ever had to be in the position of identifying someone who is a niftar. Okay? When I was in the rabbinate, I did it many, many, many times, especially when I was in Louisville, Kentucky, because all the hospitals in Louisville at the time in the 1980s were religious by name. There was a Lutheran hospital, there was a Catholic hospital, and of course, yep, there was a Jewish hospital. So nothing was done to the niftar until the rabbi arrived and helped with the family to identify and so on and so forth. So my wife and I had good friends, and Rahman al-Atslan, the woman passed away. Okay, and I remember the life that she showed. And she was an artist. She was and when she could no longer do her art, she was a photographer. And finally, unfortunately, things went on and on and on until she passed away. So I remember when she was over at our home for dinner, the liveliness, the elan vital that was there. And then that was gone when she was, you know, niftara. So that's one way to think of it, that the spirit of life that you can see, and especially when someone's healthy, right? You can see the eyes that shine. We talked about that before. There's a force that you can't describe, but you know it's there. That's ruach. So with our ruach and our neshama, okay, our soul, what is soul? What is the soul? You don't really think that I have an answer to that. Okay, it's the question that's been asked throughout all the ages. Okay, but one way to look at it is, it says right here, "Uneshama shenafachta ba'apenu," and the soul that you blew into our mouths. Okay, so what does this basically remind you of? What's it remind you? Right, it reminds you of Adam. Right. Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, that Hashem blew into him the spirit, the nishmat chayim, the soul of life. Now, what does that really mean? Well, again, it's above my pay grade, but somehow, some way, Adam has a neshama, and every other creature in the world that came before Adam, and or was purely within the animal kingdom, never had that neshama. So some people, for example, throughout the years have asked me, Rabbi, does evolution work with the Torah? And, you know, there are those people who would say absolutely not. And then if you go that route, so then there's always somebody who's been to the Museum of Natural History and has seen, okay, the skeletal fossil evidence that, of course, there were pre-humans. So what were they? So one of the answers, of course, is the Gemara from Chagiga, I believe it's Daf Yudalid Amud Aleph. There it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and destroyed many, many worlds. So what is Australis Pithecus, for example? Pithecus, I'm sorry. What is that? It's an early pre-modern, you know, it's a pre-human. So what was it, a pre-human? Yes. What did it lack by definition? A neshama. Adam and Chava are the first to have a neshama. Now, with that...
This may sound like a stupid question, but do animals now have a neshama?
No. Animals don't.
Because sometimes they look at you as if they're really,
yes,
they're doing things for you.
Yes, they,
you know,
don't.
They make you feel good, some of them.
Oh, absolutely. And they can be wonderful, but they don't have a neshama. They have a ruach, right? They have a spirit of life. And they do have some kind of emotional sensitivity. This is true. This is true.
God.
I'm sorry?
They can't serve Hashem.
Well, not the way we do. That's the point. But can they? Right? But can they serve Hashem? And the answer is yes.
Are we standing
by helping
two feet,
us,
you know?
By serving us.
Well, that's their job. Yes?
We stand on 2 feet. We're straight like
absolutely. But there's a more singular difference, and that is v'lashon asher samta befinu. That's the key. We can talk sometimes intelligently, okay? And this is the major difference between ourselves and the animals. So, for example, if you went to, well, a minor bird can talk, a parrot can talk, but, you know, and they could even say 80 years ago, if you taught them that.
But they're mimicking.
They're mimicking. Could they come up with 80 years ago? I really am not enjoying this. Can we please go to a different place? They're not going to say that because they can't. So only man can, on occasion, speak intelligently. Okay?
And babies are the first learning to talk. They just mimic you, too.
That's correct.
So,
but very quickly...
Until they're older?
But very quickly, sometimes as young as 12 months or 11 months, you may suddenly be startled in the middle of the night following the cries with the famous words, "Me eat." Right? And you wonder, where did that come from?
They don't have the speech, but they have the intellect.
I mean, oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's so clear.
Sure.
It's so clear. I mean,
right? So, in other words, but remember, being vocal is only one form of intelligence. Okay? It really is. Verbal ability is one of the kinds of intelligences, but there's so many others. You may have someone who's highly artistic, okay, but is not verbal at all. Or you may have someone who's a great writer, but you ask them to give a speech and they stutter on through. Okay, they can't do it. So, but overall, the idea of speech and the intellect that's behind that, that's a great separator between us and the animal kingdom. Okay? So all of these different things, all of the different organs and the ruach and the neshama, they all come together in one glorious symphony that we call humanity, right? Heim, heim, yodu. They all together, okay, give thanks. V'yivarchu. And they bless to the extent that a human being could bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yishabchu. And they praise. V'yifaru, and they extol. Okay? The word v'yifaru is like pe'er. Okay? It means literally beauty, but how do you give beauty to a god? So in other words, we talk about, from a human perspective, his greatness, which is to extol. Okay? E-X-T-O-L. Okay? V'romamu. And that means, again, to raise up. But how do you raise up a Kodesh Baruch Hu if he's already le'ela, ela? So we translate that really most precisely as exalt, which means that not that we actually raise a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but we recognize that he is exalted. Okay? Via aritsu, and we demonstrate devotion. Okay? Now this is just like na'aritzecha v'nakdishecha from the Musaf Kedusha. That's that word, v'ya'aritsu. So we demonstrate devotion, or we give devotion. V'yagdishu. And we recognize that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are what? Holy. Okay? And v'yamlichu. And we've discussed that over and over again throughout the years. And we literally coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We make him king. Okay, does he need us to be king? Well, kind of yes. He wants us to do that, which is why we have Rosh Hashanah, right? The coronation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu every year. So v'yamrichu et shimcha, and we coronate your essence to the extent that we can possibly have any sense of what that might be. Okay? Malkeinu, our king. Okay? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very fascinating. Russell Levitchik points this out in a variety of contexts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to be king by divine fiat. He does want us to crown him each and every year. Okay? And to think of him in these terms as Malkeinu, as a freely entered covenant with him. That's the relationship we have with Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's not, it's certainly after Purim, it's no longer duress, which we could have claimed, right, with Har Sinai over us, okay, at the time of the revelation. But after Purim, as you all know, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, we accepted it freely. So when we, what do we accept? We accepted the Torah freely. And if we are the mitzuvim, the commanded ones, we of course had to accept freely the mitzaveh, the commander, to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Now, ki kol peh lecha yodeh, every mouth. Again, talking on the human level, every mouth, okay, thanks you. V'chol lashon. Notice, by the way, the emphasis on lashon. Okay, it's not the first time, it's not the second time. I think we even had it before. Okay, it might even be the third time in this particular tefillah. V'chol lashon, in every tongue, l'cha tishava. Every tongue takes an oath of allegiance to you. Okay, in classic, this would be political theory terminology, it's an oath of fealty. Okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu is our freely chosen ruler, and we demonstrate allegiance to him by speaking to him, so to speak, an oath of allegiance. V'chol berech lecha tichra, and every knee bends to you. Okay? Now, this could be understood, since the prior word was Malkeinu, it could be understood either particularistically or universally, because what would lead me to the idea of universal is the word chol, chaflamet, that's inclusive, okay? But since it hasn't happened, if you're going to look at it from the universal perspective, when will this then obviously be true? Bizman HaMashiach. Which, of course, we're waiting for. Okay? V'chol koma. Now, this is very interesting. Every being that stands tall. Okay? Now, there's different ways of looking at this, too. Okay? One way would be there are those who are arrogant. Okay? Even those who are arrogant, lefanecha tishtachaveh, will one day bow down to you. Or perhaps it's not talking about the arrogant. Perhaps it's talking about people such as ourselves, who are not particularly, Baruch Hashem, arrogant individuals at all. But we do stand upright, as Joan pointed out before. And yet, that posture is only fitting when we're not showing obeisance and loyalty to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we need to be mishtachaveh. Hence, what do on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? We do precisely that. What did we do in the Beit HaMikdash? We did precisely that. Mishtachavim, right? Ve'omdim lifnei melech ma'achayam alchim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, that's part of it too. Okay? V'chol levavot yirarucha. Okay, and every heart, okay, shall hold you in awe. So again, it's either referring to us or universally by Yamahu Yehashem Echad Ushma Echad. V'chol, okay, let me just take my glasses off for a moment here. V'chol Kerev, okay, Uklayot. Now, every organ, okay, and our kidneys. Okay, that's what it means.
What are our kidneys?
Right? Kliyot, our kidneys. So, or
people say your innards.
Your innards, or as we say in French, kishkas, okay? Our kishkas, every part of us, okay? Now, this is fascinating. Ready for this? Yizamru l'shimcha. Every part of us, our inside, our outside, our minds, our souls, our ruach, our neshama, every part of us is going to what? Sing to you.
Okay.
There's a reason for that. I gave it's my third shir of the day, by the way.
Oh,
I gave it. Yeah, it was a wonderful day for me. I'm flying from it. I gave a shir after davening this morning, and then I gave a shir at the Young Israel, and then I gave a shir here tonight with you guys. So it happened to be in my second shir. Okay, what do we mean by kliyot? So kliyot in the Medrash are looked at as the fountain of wisdom. So much so that this is a wild Medrash. A wild Medrash. From whence did Avram Avinu learn the Torah, since it wasn't revealed to him? The Medrash says, and again, the full meaning is above my pay grade. It's very mystical. It says Avram Avinu's kliyot, his kidneys, were turned into pitchers of water, and from that water sprang forth the Torah. It's one of the opinions where Avram Avinu received it. So you see, excuse? I'm telling you what the Medrash says, which is also, by the way, probably why we have this. Okay, that's what it says. It doesn't just say v'chol kerev, right? It doesn't say on all of the organs. It specifies kliot. Now, by the way, if you want to know what you'll see in the cleaned up version in the art scroll, it says all your feelings and thoughts. But that's not what it means. It means your kishkas and your kidneys. Okay? Yizamru l'shemcha. We'll actually sing out. So in other words, all parts of the human being. Okay, because as I said before, the human being is greater than the sum of his or her parts. So,
kind of like your substance, right?
Yes, right, exactly. Every part of us, every single part of us. That means a single blood cell. Okay, it means your brain. It means every part of you. Okay, kedavar shekatuv, like it says, excuse me, in the pasuk. This is from Tehillim Lamed Hey. What an amazing pasuk. Kol atzmotai tomarna Hashem. All of my bones, literally what it says, will speak of you, Hashem. Okay? So every part of the human being is, to use a Rabbi Soloveitchik phrase, is God intoxicated, if you allow yourself to be. And that's what tefillah is. Tefillah is man being God intoxicated and telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu that that's the case. When we daven, we are madly in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an amazing, amazing idea. Kol atzmotai tomarna. All of my bones. And again, atzmotai, the same idea of etzem, the essence. So to go along with what Arlene said a moment ago, it can mean all of my essence. Okay, even though it's in the plural, we can be a little bit grammatical for a moment and just look at our entire essence, our entire being speaks of you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? And then that leads us to further recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mi chamocha. Who is like you? And of course, that's very familiar to us. Mi kamocha be'elim Hashem, right? Mi kamocha neder b'kodesh. Okay? As such, this is continuing the same pasuk, matzil ani mechazak mimenu, that you, look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described. How is HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing his ultimate power? That he saves the poor from he who is more powerful from the poor. So we're not talking about like, you are so amazing, Hashem, you made Mount Everest. You are so amazing, you made the fjords of Norway. No, because that's not the ultimate power. The ultimate power is what Avraham Avinu recognized. Chen v'chesed v'rachamim and gimulut chasadim. That you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you show us your power by saving the ani, the poor person, from the person who is more powerful than he. V'ani v'evyon, and not only that, the poor and the abjectly destitute, and it goes low. from he who would steal, right, from them. This is the whole pasuk from Kohelet's Matayot to here. What a powerful, amazing description. But look, we start with mi kamocha, right? Who is like you? And now we see the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. True, it's in Bereshit Bara Elokim Yirat Shemayim Yirat Haaretz. But in terms of the running of the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. He does not let us down. Like we said last week, Lo Yanum Velo Yishan. You don't sort of nod off and you don't sleep. Okay? And now we get into a very, very beautiful kind of way of talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mi Yidmelach, who is similar to you. And of course, all these are rhetorical, right? Okay, even though that there are some people who would like to answer me, okay, we know that this is rhetorical. So, mi yidmelach, who can be compared to you? Umi yishvelach, who is equal to you? Umi ya'arach lach, and who, in a sense, the word erech, with an ayin, means length, but it means in this, again, a way of comparing. Who can be compared? Who is similar in kind? Okay? And now, go ahead, please.
Hashem's, you know, infinite.
Yes.
There's nothing else, and no one else, and that's what you'd say with the length.
Absolutely. Correct. Oh, that's very good. Take it literally. I like that. Okay? So, mi arach lach, who has your erech? With an ayin. Very good. I like that very much. Because Hashem is infinite, goes on forever. Like we said last week, we think of the galaxy, you know, we get amazed when we see the Milky Way, right? That's one of how many galaxies? One of how many galaxies? We don't even know. Okay, and we think that, you know, we're it. But we're only one sun system among how many? The more, you know, we see, when we learn, we see the greatness of Kodesh Baruch Hu.
We're just so limited.
We are. I mean, I think I mentioned this once before. When Arlene and I were first married, we went up to Maine, and we went to Acadia National Park, and the part of the park we were in was not built up at all. And we stopped by the side of the road, and one side was the ocean and the other side was fresh water, and up above us were more stars than we had ever seen in our entire life. Okay, I could literally read a map by the stars, let alone by the light of the moon. Okay, and that's only a minuscule part of our own solar system. So it's pretty amazing. So mi arach lach, and then we have a famous description of Akel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanara. Now that happens to be, so I can find that, Sefer Devarim, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, that's where Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vanara comes from. But where are, for those of us who may not know it's from Devarim, where do we say three times a day, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vanara? Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, what's Kale? Kale is all powerful. Gadol, the great. Okay, now when we say great, we don't mean great in comparison to us. We mean a sense of greatness that, again, to use what Naomi said before, it's immeasurable. Okay, Hagibur, the now Gibur, by the way, is subject to two ways of interpretation. The heroic is one way, right? Because what was it called, Shimshon? Shimshon was Shimshon HaGibor. That's one way. And the other way is, again, the powerful. Hashem HaGavura VaGadula, and so forth. So that's a sense of tremendous, tremendous power. What's the difference between Kael and being Gibor? I think that would probably take several hours to go into all the sources. Just believe me, it means powerful for our purposes tonight. Vahanora. What is Nora? Nora, if you have teenagers, okay, is a word you've heard too many times. Awesome! Okay? Awesome. What I like to say, is even better than awesome because it's so overly used. I like to do the word awe-filled, that you are filled with awe, and in turn, we have awe for you. Okay? Kael Elyon, okay, the Most High God. Now, where does that come from? So in Lech Lecha, one of the shuls I was in, I once taught Parshat Lech Lecha an entire year. So it's one of the parshiot I learned inside out, upside down, and so forth. So the phrase Kael Elyon is used with Malki Tzedek in Parshat Lech Lecha. Okay, after the war between the four kings and the five kings, Malki Tzedek comes out. Okay, and Malki Tzedek uses the term Kael Elyon, the Most High God. It's interesting, a pasuk or two later, what does Avraham say back to him? He says, Hashem Kael Elyon, because lest Malki Tzedek thought of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as only being the greatest of the gods, Lahavdil, he was Zeus, right, in terms of the Greek pantheon. Okay, so maybe it's unclear, by the way, whether Malki Tzedek was a pantheist, right? He had the idea of many gods, okay? Or was he really a monotheist? We're not sure. But Avraham Avinu, since he was Avraham Avinu, wasn't taking any chances. So what did he do? He says, Haramati Adi Lahashem Kael Elyon. There's only one Most High God. Okay? And then, of course, we have the phrase Kone Shemayim Vaharetz. What do we have in the bracha of Birkat Avot? We don't say Kone Shemayim Vaharetz. What do we say? Kone Hakol. Okay? That's what we say in Birkat Avot. So what's Kone Shemayim Vaharetz? So there's different ways of interpreting it. One way is he's the creator, right? Even though the word kone does not directly mean to create. Or you could say he is in control of the heavens and the earth. And that, of course, means the entire cosmos, as well as, of course, where we live, namely the earth itself. Okay, so rather than pushing too fast forward, we're going to stop here. Let me share with you what my goals are. Next week, Bli Neder, I'd like to finish Nishmat Kol Chai. And in addition to finishing Nishmat Kol Chai, I'd like to give an introduction to Megillat Esther. And from we're going to go on. Well, if I wait too long, we won't get enough of Megillat Esther done. Okay? So, but basically what we're going to do is finish Nishmat Kol Chai and get an introduction to Megillat Esther. I want to thank all of you for coming and making this evening truly special.